Welcome to Inside the Numbers. I'm your host, Boji Wood, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to take a look at this week's NFL playoff games and preview Monday night's national championship game between Alabama and Georgia. We'll take a quick break, and when I come back, Mike Bernard from OTM Sports will join us, and we'll get right into the show on Inside the Numbers.
You're listening to Inside the Numbers with Boji Wood. Catch a replay of this show at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Hear interviews with coaches as well as current and former players, plus previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games. It's all at GameDaySportsRadio.com. That's GameDaySportsRadio.com.
Welcome back to Inside the Numbers, bringing in Mike Bernard from OTM Sports. Mike, how are you doing this week?
Doing well, Coach. A little bit under the weather, but ready to talk some NFL playoff action. And also, of course, we got the national championship game in college football.
And you may be under the weather, but it wasn't because of poor football this last week. I'm telling you, there was a lot of great games. And, of course, one of the games that I want to touch on real quick, the Peach Bowl, number 7 Auburn, number 12 Central Florida. The Knights came in there. Not a lot of people were giving the Knights a lot of respect, but they came in. They beat the Auburn Tigers 34-27 in a game, really, I didn't think was that close. UCF missed a couple of makeable field goals that could have spread out even more. Again, I look at it as UCF came in very focused. Their coaching staff was doing two jobs during the last month, both coaching the Knights and recruiting for Nebraska. But I thought the coaches and the players did a great job. Now, you're going to turn around and tell me that that happened because Auburn didn't care about being in the Peach Bowl, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you said people didn't give Central Florida a chance. Well, look, not to pat ourselves on the back, but what you and I talked about, Central Florida is a good team. They went on the road, beat a Big Ten team on the road. They've been in this situation before, and it's just simply that when a non-Power 5 team has a chance to show what they can do against a Power 5 team that was so close to being in the playoff, it just seems to work out this way. And Central Florida, look, they could beat anybody on a given day. And I'm not going to, you know, I've argued that before, and it's really a waste of time because people don't get it. But Central Florida can play.
Yes, they can. And we go back to Hurricane Irma early in the season. There were a lot of things that transpired over that early part of the college football season because of Hurricane Irma. One thing that hurt Central Florida, they had to cancel a game with Georgia Tech. And at that time, Georgia Tech was still ranked in the top 25. I think that had they been able to play that game and beat Tech, that would have given more credence to Central Florida's schedule, and they would have been 14-0 right now. But again, hey, I thought the Knights did a great job taking down the Tigers. And again, being an ex-Auburn GA, I was rooting for Auburn. But again, I have to take my hat off to Scott Frost and all the Central Florida Knights. Now, Mike, let's move out to the Rose Bowl. That was an all-time instant classic out there. Oklahoma jumps up. Looks like they're going to run away with the game. Georgia come back with just a new vigor in the second half, and they end up winning that game 54-48 in double overtime.
Yeah, and that was the one thing that I talked about that I didn't think Georgia wanted. They did not want to be in a track meet. They were able to do it. And, Coach, you know, the announcers alluded to it, but that field goal at the end of the first half was huge for Georgia.
It
went from three scores to two scores.
It was an unbelievable swing. Now, and again, I think Lincoln Riley, I think he did a fabulous job this year, going all the way back when the Sooners went up into Columbus to take on Ohio State. And he went out, and listen, he dedicated himself to the run. He did a great job early on in the season. I think he made some rookie mistakes in the Rose Bowl this past Monday. I wanted to say this past Saturday, but this past Monday. I think he made two rookie mistakes. Number one, all he wanted to do was pin Georgia deep on that kickoff right before the end of the first half. Now, let's think about this. If he just kicks the ball out of bounds, deliberately kicks the ball out of bounds, Then Georgia gets the ball at the 35-yard line. There are 5 seconds left. Jake Fromm can't throw it to the end zone from there, so they're not going to heave it. They don't have time to run the 10, 12-yard out to get into field goal range, because now that 10 to 12-yard out turns into a 25 to 30-yard out, and time's going to expire. Georgia's going to take a knee because Kirby's smart. Right. He plays by the book. Georgia's going to take a knee. They're going to go in. It's going to be 31-14, as you said, a three-score game. However, a poor – and, again, I don't put this on the kicker. I really don't. I put it on the coaches. But because it hit the front line, they were able to get the ball up around inside the 50, and then they were able to run the quick 12-yard out, hit it, still had time to kick the field goal. To me, that was the pivotal play in the game.
Absolutely. And, you know, one other thing is that up back on the kickoff return for Georgia, he took a big risk. If that ball goes off his face mask and Oklahoma gets it, maybe they get a throw to the end zone. But that was just huge for momentum, because, again, when the players are heading into the locker room and they see 31-14 and 31-17, in my mind, that's just a huge difference.
It is a huge difference, because now Georgia comes out, they score first. Guess what? It's still a two-score game. Not anymore. They score. It's a one-score game. And, again, I think that is the pivotal play. Another pivotal play, late in regulation. Oklahoma's driving the ball very easily. They have 3rd and 2 inside Georgia territory, and they run a wheel route. I do not understand that call, especially when early on during the season, and really all season, we have complimented Lincoln Riley about staying with the run game. And at that time, the Sooners were gashing the Bulldogs for 4 and 5 yards a pop. I cannot believe that he didn't run the ball on that 3rd and 2.
I think that's the offensive coordinator in him and many other coaches. Eventually, they want to go deep into that playbook. But look, like I said, I'm with you. I was impressed all year with Lincoln Riley, his focus and emphasis on running the ball. And that is a case to where, of course, after the fact, it's easy to say, but he should have run the ball, because they were having success against that great Georgia defense.
He was. And speaking of defense, Oklahoma's defense just didn't show up. Outside of the fumble, cause fumble, and the recovery and return for the touchdown, that's really the only huge play that they made all day.
Yeah, the first half, I thought Oklahoma's defense did well. The second half, they started to run out of gas. I think Georgia started to wear them down. Before the game, I thought the game was a coin flip, and, of course, that turned out to be the case. When you're talking about a double overtime game, lead changes back and forth in the fourth quarter. But that fumble recovery for a touchdown, that could have been the dagger for Georgia. But to their credit, they stayed with it and ended up getting the victory in double OT.
Speaking of daggers, Alabama, Clemson in the Sugar Bowl, the Alabama defense, they put the dagger to Clemson. This is a 24-6 score, and it really seemed like in the second half, looking back, oh, it was never in doubt. Listen, it was a 10-6 score. Clemson has the football, and the Alabama defense back-to-back comes up with two huge plays to stretch that lead out to 24-6, and the Tide held on. But guess what? Clemson's defense, and again, I know that the short pass play was on the defense. I'm not an idiot. But Clemson's defense did not give up any points in the second half.
Oh, yeah. Again, I looked at both semifinal games as coin flips. I mean, they were just toss-ups, and that game was 10-6 with maybe, I don't know, mid to late third quarter. And then those two defensive plays turned the game around for Alabama. And Clemson's offense couldn't do anything. The Alabama defense played great. But look, that was still the worst offensive performance of the year statistically for Alabama.
All right, we're going to take a break, Mike. And when we come back, we're going to talk NFL Saturday playoff action. But, of course, we'll be back and revisit the Alabama-Georgia matchup. We'll have the Weber Mortgage Spotlight game preview with Michael Weber. And, of course, Mike Bernard, you and I will talk about that game, too. We'll do all that when we come back on Inside the Numbers.
The best in sports talk and analysis is at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Every week, Mike Bernard and longtime college coach Boji Wood break down the biggest matchups in both college football and the NFL. GameDaySportsRadio.com features interviews with top coaches, as well as current and former players. Get all the information you want in one place, GameDaySportsRadio.com. Previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games are just a click away at GameDaySportsRadio.com.
Welcome back to Inside the Numbers. Boji Wood along with Mike Bernard from OTM Sports out in Las Vegas. Mike, let's talk about Saturday NFL playoff action. The Titans and the Chiefs. Titans in the regular season at 9-7. Chiefs ended at 10-6. Titans had to have a win in Week 17 to get into the postseason. Chiefs, they needed a win, but they were in no matter what. The Titans, they beat Jacksonville 15-10. They got the number 5 spot. Chiefs, they came in as the number 4 seed. This has been really a roller coaster type season for the Chiefs. I mean, they start the year 5-0, then lose 6 of the next 7, but then they close out the year with 4 straight wins. Andy Reid's team is, again, they've been on a roller coaster.
Yeah, and who knows which Chiefs teams we're going to see Saturday afternoon. We do know this. The Chiefs have been awful in the postseason. Coach, going back to 1994, Kansas City's won just one playoff game. They're 1-11 in the postseason. They're also 1-11 against the Vegas point spread in those games. Tennessee, look, they've been up and down as well. They lost 3 in a row before beating the Jaguars in Week 17.
Now, from a coaching standpoint, just of an eyeball test, they don't look like a playoff contender to me, and they wouldn't have won the game against the Jags if they weren't plus 3 in the turnover margin. Now, Alex Smith with the Chiefs, he's had 25 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. Very good numbers, but he's going to be without 2 of his top weapons in their leading rusher, Kareem Hunt, and then they're not going to have wide receiver DeAnthony Thomas. So a lot of pressure on Alex Smith this week.
Yeah, I think so. When you play 16 games and develop a rapport with teammates, then you lose them for a playoff game. That's really tough. You know, not like you can go on the waiver wire or get somebody off the practice squad and find somebody to fill in without missing a beat. Kansas City is favored by 8 to 9 points, depending on which casino you look at. It shows you how little the odds makers think of Tennessee right now.
Right, and we've talked about trying to plug and play in the NFL. It just doesn't work. Look at the offensive line with the Redskins. You know, that was their downfall this year. And if you look at these two head coaches, though, I've got to give the edge to the Kansas City's Andy Reid. He's been a fixture in the NFL for a long time. And his teams, you know, he hasn't won that Super Bowl yet. He's gotten there but hasn't won it yet. But he is a very steady coach. And I think when they went through that 6 out of 7 losing streak, you know, a lot of coaches would have lost their team. He never lost the team. And I think that's going to bode well for them in the playoffs. Mike Mularkey, on the other hand, he's in his third year. I think they expected more success in Nashville than they've gotten with Mularkey in his third year. You know, I think kind of to smooth the waters, hey, he needs a couple of playoff wins this year.
Yeah, he does. And for a while there, especially after Week 17, that Tennessee Titans team, the players looked demoralized. Their body language was horrible. They felt like they were out. They knew they had to win. And again, the Rams, in that game, they didn't have to have that play. They played their starters, but kind of went through the motions. So I'm really interested to see how Tennessee comes out in this game. When I take a look at numbers, I mentioned it earlier. The Chiefs are 1-11 in the postseason since 1994. Tennessee, they're not good on the road, so they've only covered 8 of their last 28 road games. Both teams are struggling, but somebody has to win this game, and somebody's going to have to cover it, unless, of course, it lands on the number. I'm going to pass on the side, but I'm going to look at the total. The under is 44-19 in the Chiefs' last 63 home games. The Titans' last 4 playoff games all stayed under. Those trends, combined with the Chiefs' offensive injuries, they make me lean to the under here.
All right, Mike, let's go on and talk about the Falcons and the Rams. The Falcons in the regular season at 10-6 for a long time. We didn't even know if the Falcons were going to get back to the playoffs. The surprising Rams, 11-5, they win the NFC West. And, you know, and it's kind of weird, Atlanta in the Super Bowl last year, and now they've got to go on the road in a playoff game. And, listen, they didn't even have the final wild card spot wrapped up until they beat Carolina in Week 17. Now, with the Rams, this is the first playoff appearance since 2005, and they were the St. Louis Rams then. And at that time, they lost to the Falcons in the Georgia Dome 47-17.
Yeah, it's been a long time since the Rams were significant. They have a new head coach. They have an explosive offense. I think they're still the number one scoring offense in the league. They have a great defensive line. Atlanta had to win 6 of their last 8 games just to get that number 6 spot, as you talked about. The NFC South is very tough. 3 of the 4 teams in that division are in the postseason.
And as you've told me many times, the loser of the Super Bowl, more times than not, doesn't even make it back to the playoffs. So I think you have to give Atlanta some kudos for getting back there. And even though they don't look like the Falcons of old, the 2016 team that got to the Super Bowl, but they did lose their offensive coordinator. And Kyle Shanahan, he's the coach of the San Francisco 49ers now. And their points per game have dropped from 34 to 22 under new offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, that's a big drop-off. And really, you know, most of the top offensive players are still in place, so I can't put my finger on why the offense isn't putting up points in 2017. They need to find some offense for this wild card game, Coach. The Rams are going to put up points, or likely to put up points, because they have Todd Gurley at running back. Cooper Kupp's had a great year, and Sammy Watkins at wide receiver. They score 30 a game. Plus, the Rams' defense is in the top 5 in the league in pressuring the quarterback.
Well, now, Atlanta, you know, even though they've not scored the tight points that they did last year, they've done a pretty good job of protecting Matt Ryan, except with the most recent Saints game. Against Carolina, he threw for 300-plus, and it was only his fourth 300-yard game this season, compared to last year when he had 9 300-yard-plus games on the way to the Super Bowl. But Matt Ryan needs a good game, and the defense has to slow down Todd Gurley in that Ram rushing attack.
Yeah, I think Matt Ryan needs to play big. And that defense, that's a big key. Atlanta's defense is ranked 9th against the rush, so they need to be solid there. Some other numbers to look at in this matchup. The last 21 times these teams have played, 16 of those went over the Vegas total. The best team usually wins and covers in this series. The favorite's 13-3 against the number the last 16 meetings. And one last trend to note, Atlanta is 0-4 straight up, 0-4 against the spread. Their last 4 road playoff games, that goes all the way back to 2003.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, look at Sunday NFL action, playoff action on Inside the Numbers.
Picking college football winners every time isn't easy, but picking the right mortgage company is. Weber Mortgage has been helping people buy homes since 1999. Literally thousands of people are living in their dream homes with the help of Weber Mortgage. I'm Michael Weber, and using Weber Mortgage is a sure bet. If you're thinking about buying a home this year, call 205-823-6701 or visit us at webermortgage.com. That's 205-823-6701 for Weber Mortgage.
And we're back on Inside the Numbers. Let's go ahead and take a look at Sunday NFL playoff action. We're going to start out with the Bills and the Jags. The Jags won the AFC South despite losing their last 2 regular season games. They're going to host the Bills on Sunday in Jacksonville at the AFC wildcard game. Now, Mike, in our production meetings, you told me that the Bills had like a 13% chance of even making the playoffs headed into the final regular season. But the Bills, they got the win they needed down in Miami, and the Ravens lost at home to the Bengals on a last-minute touchdown pass from Andy Dalton. So the Bills are in at 9-7. They're heading down to Jacksonville, but guess what? When this game is played, the Bengals, who are at home for the playoff season, they're going to be able to eat a lot of wings because there's a restaurant in Buffalo that sent the Bengals almost 1,500 chicken wings, celery, sauce, blue cheese, the whole works, thanking them for getting the Bills into the playoffs.
That's right. And the reason the Bills had, by computer standards, a 13% chance to make the playoffs was that game was played in Baltimore. And the Bengals won, and Baltimore was a double-digit favorite. So they did what they had to do in Miami, and then the Bengals helped them out. And that shows you how even when the Bengals had a tough year, the AFC North is so competitive, the Bengals knocked off the Ravens. Jacksonville, Coach, they give up just under 17 a game. But in Week 16, they showed a little chink in their armor. The Niners put up 44 points on them. On paper, Tennessee and Buffalo are the weakest teams in the postseason. Add to the fact that the Bills running back, LeSean McCoy, is banged up. He may not play, and he certainly won't be 100%. Buffalo, they only average 19 points a game. We should be looking at a defensive standoff here.
We should be, but now just from a history standpoint, let's remember that this is the first time the Bills have been in the playoffs in 18 years or 18 seasons. Their last appearance was back in 2000, and it was the game that had the Music City Miracle, that controversial ladder on the kickoff return right at the end of the at the game caused them to lose. But now the Bills haven't won a playoff game since 1995. You know, in back in the early 90s, they went to four straight Super Bowls, which is phenomenal. But they haven't won a playoff game in over 20 years. The Jags, they haven't won in the postseason since 2008. They haven't hosted a playoff game since 2000. So both of these teams, they're in unfamiliar territory.
Bills and Jaguars aren't the names we think of when it comes to NFL playoffs, so you're right. They're both in uncharted territory. Last year, the Jags were 3-13. Buffalo only won 7 games last season. The Bills had a great run, as you mentioned, in the 90s, when going to 4 straight Super Bowls. They lost all 4 of those, but still, it's a great feat. Jags are only 1 of 4 teams never to play in the Super Bowl. The other 3 teams are the Browns, the Lions, and the Texans.
Right. Well, most people are going to predict that the Pats or the Steelers are going to represent the AFC. And the NFC more wide open now that Carson Wentz is out for the Eagles. Pittsburgh and New England, you know, they do look like the class of the AFC. But Jacksonville finally has a team that's built for the postseason. They can run the ball, they can stop the run, and they pressure the quarterback.
That's right. They're built for the postseason. They came into the league in 95. So in 96, year number 2, they made it to the AFC Championship game. They made it to the championship game and again in 99, but they haven't been to the Super Bowl so far.
Yeah, Jacksonville hasn't had much success since those years, but maybe this year they can make a run. I know they're capable. I mean, in October, they went up to Pittsburgh and they beat the Steelers 30-9 at Heinz Field.
Yeah, and that win at Pittsburgh was no fluke. The defense forced Big Ben into a lot of turnovers. If Jacksonville gets past the Bills, they're going to have more than a puncher's chance. They'll be an underdog, but they'll have a chance. Some trends to look at, numbers. The trends all lead to the Bills. The Bills have covered 5 of the last 7 meetings in Jacksonville. The underdogs covered 5 of the last 7 matchups. But I don't see Buffalo putting up enough points to win this game.
Okay, let's move on to our later game on Sunday. It's the Panthers and the Saints. It's the NFC South champion versus the runner-up. Now, of course, along with the Falcons, the NFC South has 3 teams in the playoffs, and this is going to be part 3 for Cam Newton and Drew Brees this season. Now, the Saints, they've won both regular season meetings.
They did, and they won both games by double digits. But now the Saints have to beat this 11-5 Panthers team for a third time in the same season. It's a very tough ask, but Vegas has Brees and the Saints favored by a touchdown.
I think one thing that you have to look at this game is that they're playing in the Superdome, where the Saints have won 5 straight playoff games. They actually haven't lost a home playoff game since 1993. Now, we know that Cam Newton has a lot of athletic ability. I mean, he can put that team on his shoulders and carry them. But, listen, he's going to have to pick it up because he's got to play well, because the issue for Carolina in the first 2 meetings was really the Panthers' defense, because they couldn't stop running backs Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. And if that's the case again, then guess what? Cam Newton, for the Panthers to win, he's going to have to elevate his game even more, because if Drew Brees has a run game to set up play action, it's tough for a defense to slow him down.
It really is. It's that time of year when stopping the run and establishing the run on offense are a must. You and I talk about it year-round, but if you can't do it in January, you're going to be sitting at home.
Yeah, and this Saints defense, they look much better than in recent years, and they're plus 7 in takeaways compared to negative 3 last year. Now, again, you know, Cam has quieted the doubters in the past, and as I've said, you know, he can carry a team. but he's going to have to come up big in New Orleans.
I think Cam needs to play like an MVP, and the defense cannot let New Orleans run on them. Take a look at some numbers. The Saints have covered six straight over Carolina. They've got the Panthers' number. This is the first time these teams have ever met in the postseason. The Saints' last eight home playoff games were all high scoring. All eight of those went over the total. That stat goes all the way back to 1998. Coach, I'm going to go with history here, and I'm going to lean to the over in this game.
When we come back, it's time for the Weber Mortgage Spotlight Preview, and we're going to take a look at Georgia and Alabama in the national championship game on Inside the Numbers.
You're listening to Inside the Numbers with Bogie Wood. Catch a replay of this show at GameDaySportsRadio.com. Hear interviews with coaches as well as current and former players, plus previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games. It's all at GameDaySportsRadio.com. That's GameDaySportsRadio.com.
Welcome back into Inside the Numbers, and it's time to bring Michael Weber, the president of Weber Mortgage, into the show because it's time for the Weber Mortgage Spotlight Game Preview. Of course, it's the national championship game Monday night here in Atlanta, Georgia, and Alabama. Michael, welcome into the show.
Bogey, thanks as always. It was a tough choice what game we were going to cover this week, obviously, for the Weber Mortgage Spotlight, and if I've got one disappointment, it's the fact that our college football season's almost over.
It is. You know, just in a matter of 48 hours or so from now, we will be a little bit over 48 hours from now, be kicking that game off. And, of course, we'll crown a national champion at the end of that game. And then it's a long wait till August.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I'm amazed at these people who track recruiting as closely as they do, because I have a day job that I have to earn a living at running Weber Mortgage. But I like to hear the tidbits about recruiting, but it's tough to be as mentally involved in that aspect of college football as it is during the season. So, you know, after Monday night's game, it'll kind of be a hiatus for me, and I'll just kind of hear the bits and pieces as we get recruiting updates through the media and the normal venues.
And you know, Michael, you mentioned recruiting, and recruiting is really going to change because this is the first year that we had the early signing period. So, you know, in reality, the major schools, they only have four or five slots that they can fill this this coming first Wednesday in February. So it's kind of it's a unique situation. It's the first time we've ever dealt with this, and I'm wondering, again, you're going to cover recruiting no matter what, but I'm just wondering, is the buildup going to be a letdown, so to speak, simply because a lot of the big names have already signed, and some of the big names are actually on campus this week starting classes. They graduated from high school early.
Well, Coach, you can obviously speak to this a lot more than I can, but I feel like the recruiting system is broken, but I don't know how to fix it. I feel like there are ways – broken may be not the right word, but I feel like it could be improved on. This is a step to try to make that improvement, I feel like. But I don't know the right way to make it better, but I just feel like there's a lot of pressure on a lot of people at the wrong times where recruiting is concerned, and I don't know how to make that better.
I'm in total agreement with you there. It's very difficult as a football coach to prepare your team, get ready during the week, and then also make time for recruiting. You know, that's why these coaches are working anywhere from 18 to 22 hours a day during the season, just trying to get prepared for Saturday, and then again having to make sure that your recruiting binder is up to date, because listen, and if you don't do it, then you're falling behind.
And I almost feel like it's the one thing that would push a college coach to the pros, because in the pros you've got entire staff and departments that are geared towards identifying talent and finding out who we need to fill gaps. And there's not as much, you know, courting in the process. So, you know, from a pro coaching standpoint, you get to focus more on the X's and O's of the day. I feel like if you're a college coach, either probably enjoy the recruiting or you probably don't enjoy the recruiting, and there's probably not a whole lot in between.
You're exactly right about that, Michael. Well, let's move on to the game. We've got two SEC teams, of course, playing for the title. You've got the SEC champion Georgia and then the West runner-up Alabama. Of course, Georgia in a classic Rose Bowl outlasted Oklahoma in double overtime. Clemson, of course, got there, had to go face Alabama again in what I really thought was a home environment, and Alabama got their revenge on the Tigers 24-6 in New Orleans. Michael, of course, you were sitting as part of that packed house down in the Superdome. Was it as electric in person early on as it seemed like on television?
It really was an incredible environment. It was a capacity crowd, of course, for a Sugar Bowl, and that was 73,000-75,000, something like that. And, you know, the Superdome, of course, is ancient, right? By today's standards, it's built in the 70s. And it's so big that I don't know that you get the same feeling that you might get in some of the other places, but certainly it's indoors. The sound reverberates. You've got Clemson taking up roughly – it really felt like, as opposed to years past, it felt like Alabama was maybe 60-40, 65-35 on the tickets to me, because as I sat and looked across at the Clemson side, I felt like I saw a lot more red mixed in with the orange than I did the orange mixed in with the red on our side. And I think it made a difference. I think that, you know, defensively, when Clemson was on the field, there was a lot more noise when Clemson offensively was on the field and Alabama was defensively on the field. There was a lot more noise than the other way around. And, of course, that may be the best defensive performance we've seen out of Alabama since the 92 championship game against Miami. That was just a dominant football game by Alabama's defense.
And also, of course, now Nick Saban can get the monkey off of his back and say, yes, I have won a Sugar Bowl as the head coach of the Crimson Tide. Well, talking about Georgia and Alabama, the last time that these two teams met, Michael, was back in October of 15, and, of course, we remember that. That was the blackout game.
Yeah, and I think, any time you try to gimmick up a game, you run the risk of it backfiring, especially with momentum. I didn't get to go to that game, but my brother was there, and he talked about how incredible it was to hear such a quiet crowd, you know, where the game was at Georgia. Obviously, the Bulldogs were favored by a point. Actually, the last time that Bama was an underdog. And of course, the Tide won that in a very convincing fashion, 38-10. Bama has won three straight over Georgia. They won in 08. They won in the 2012 SEC title game that I was at, and that was an unbelievable game to be at. And then 2015 in Athens. So there, even though these teams don't meet regularly, when they do meet, there tends to be a lot of fireworks.
That's right. The last time the Bulldogs beat Alabama, if my memory serves me correct, Matthew Stafford was a freshman quarterback, and they beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. I think that game was in overtime, if my memory serves me correct. But, you know, I'm getting old, so that may be wrong. Now, listen, we can talk Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, and, you know, Jeremy Pruitt knows a lot about the Georgia program. He was there just a couple of years ago. You know, there is so much in this game that you could pick a storyline. But I think you go back to that 2012 SEC title game you mentioned. That game was a classic. Georgia got the lead in the fourth quarter. Alabama came back and took the lead on a long touchdown pass from A.J. McCarron to Amari Cooper with about a little under 4 minutes left. Georgia drives right back down the field. It looks like they're going in for a score. Very controversial after the fact decision by Mark Richt not to just down the ball, get in the huddle, call a play. They called a play at the line with a clock running. Georgia wide receiver Chris Conley, a ball is tipped his way. Natural instincts, he catches it. He's tackled inbounds, and the game is over. And there's no doubt in my mind, Michael, that if Georgia wins that football game, they go on and they play Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl for the national championship. Mark Richt is probably still in Athens with a national championship trophy.
No, absolutely. And, you know, that game felt a whole lot like the Oklahoma-Georgia game. I mean, it was just blow for blow. And you kind of felt like, hey, whoever's got the ball last is going to win, which is a lot of what I was anticipating from the Alabama-Clemson game, which turned out obviously completely different. So I kind of feel like in this game coming up, the type of game we see may determine who wins it. If we see a blow-for-blow game, I feel like that falls a little bit more in Georgia's wheelhouse than it does in Alabama's. And if we see a game that is not blow for blow and that one team is able to dominate the other, or at least to control, you know, the momentum of the game, I feel like that works in Alabama's favor. And I don't think there's a lot of gray area in between. I think if it becomes a shootout, I don't know that I'm impressed enough with Jalen Hurts' ability to connect on downfield passes to stay in a shootout. And I don't know that in a game that is one side is going to dominate, I don't feel like Georgia has the ability to dominate an Alabama team, where Alabama obviously showed us, at least defensively, I mean, to hold Clemson to 100 yards, that's incredible. So You wouldn't expect to see that in this game, but we certainly know that at least one of these teams has the potential to dominate that game.
Michael, we're going to get your prediction on the game in just a minute. But first of all, let's tell the folks about Weber Mortgage. And no matter where you're listening to the show, on one of our affiliates from coast to coast, or you're listening to it over our website, GameDaySportsRadio.com, Weber Mortgage can help you. Michael, tell the folks how they can get in touch with you. And right now, again, going into 2018, it's still a great time to get a new mortgage or a refi.
It is, Bogey, and most of the experts expect interest rates to drift up into the mid-4s. When you look at the national predictions, you see anywhere from the average for 2018 being between 4.4% on 30-year money up to about 4.6%. And with that being the average, that tells you that by the end of the year, they think it'll be above that. So we really feel like we'll see interest rate movement this year. The markets are so strong and the economies are so strong. Don't put it off. If you're thinking about buying, the spring is going to be a fantastic time to buy. Right now is a fantastic time to buy. You're just coming out of the holidays. A lot of people that wanted to sell their house have waited through the holidays, and they're going to be motivated because they're going to be ready to move. So if you're thinking about buying, now's the time to do it. If you haven't refinanced, maybe you're thinking about selling, but you've changed your mind, or you need to get some cash to cover all this debt that you just ran up to buy the kids all their Christmas presents, or to go to the Sugar Bowl, or maybe you're paying $2,600 a ticket for a national championship game ticket. You're probably going to need to do a cash out refinance to fund that purchase. So now's a perfect time to do it. We would love to help anybody who's listening to us right now, and they can reach us on the telephone with our Alabama number, 205-823-6701. They can reach us through the website, www.webermortgage.com. And, of course, they can reach us through Game Day Sports Radio as well. But we've got affiliates all over the country, so we can help people anywhere they're at, Coach.
Right. No matter, of course, you're based in Alabama, you're going to write mortgages in Alabama. But, again, no matter where you're listening to us throughout the country, Weber Mortgage has a great network, and they'll put you in touch with someone in your area that's going to give you the same type personalized service. All right, Michael, listen, this game to me pulls down to one thing, and that is if Jake Fromm, the freshman, if they can find a way to stretch Alabama's defense and make Alabama bring Alabama controls the run with six players. It's phenomenal. They're two gapping up front with their defensive linemen. Linebackers are just running free. Again, they're stopping you with six players on the run, and they've got enough coverage in the back that with these two high safeties that nobody tries to stretch them. Nobody takes the time to do play action, get back, and throw it deep. If Jake Fromm, if he can't do that, Alabama, in my opinion, wins going away. If he can stretch the field a little bit, make Alabama respect what's going on, then guess what? Now, all of a sudden, then I think Chubb, Sony Michel, and DeAndre Swift, they have a chance to make some big plays in the run game. But I think it all boils down to if Georgia can make Alabama defend the entire field, and the only way they're going to be able to do that is by stretching the field. Again, I look for Alabama. I look for Alabama to be able to take care of them defensively, but that's Georgia's only chance, in my opinion.
I think you are spot on with that analysis, Boji. And in a year where the SEC is down, to have an all-SEC final is just, I mean, just incredibly impressive. And obviously, you don't have to worry about anybody being mad at the committee about putting Alabama in instead of Ohio State. So they're breathing a little bit easier in this game. You know, the real question I have for you or for people to think about in relation to this past weekend versus – or this past Monday versus this Monday – was Clemson not able to stretch the field because they didn't have the ability to throw the downfield pass, or did Alabama's pass rush, which kind of came out of nowhere because they really haven't had a fantastic pass rush this year, was that pass rush prohibiting them from having enough time to stretch the field? So you're right. Can Jake Fromm stretch that field and open up, soften up the linebacking core a little bit and give their runners space, but is he even going to have the time to do that? Is Alabama's defensive front so strong that, I mean, he's not going to have the time? And that's the real question. So I agree with you 100%. That's the key. But I don't think Fromm is the key so much, in my opinion, as the defensive front of Alabama versus the offensive front of Georgia, because I don't think you could blame Clemson's quarterback. I think the loss in that game came from the fact that he barely had time to look up from the snap before he was under pressure. So in the end, I think this is going to be a good game, and it's really a matter of which Alabama defense shows up. I feel like if they're able to replicate their performance from this past Monday night, I really don't feel like Georgia's got much of a chance. I think Bama probably wins the game, but I don't think offensively Alabama's going to put up a bunch of points. So I'm going to say Alabama probably wins this game 31-24.
I can see that. I really think that Alabama's defense, and it may not be from just an overall talent standpoint, the best that Saban's ever had at Alabama, but as far as, and again, last year's defense was phenomenal at creating defensive touchdowns, and they've only got a couple this year. But the thing that impresses me about this year's defense is that when they need a big play, they make a big play. And I think that's what we've got to look for on Monday night in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, is we've got to those crucial times in the game. Coach Bryant always used to say, you know, there's only two or three plays that win or loses a football game. And I think when we look back after the game, we're going to find those two or three plays, and we're going to say, hey, was Georgia able to make those plays? And I think it's going to come down to the Georgia offense. Was Georgia offense able to make those plays, or was the Alabama defense able to make those plays? That's what I think that we're going to have to, when we look back at the game, I think that's what's going to be the determining factor.
Either way, I expect it to be a great game, Boji, and I think from a national championship game standpoint, I tell you what, any of those four teams, I think, in this game would have produced a fantastic game. And as an Alabama fan, I worry about Georgia's resilience in that Oklahoma game. I'll be honest with you, sitting there watching it at halftime, I felt like that game was over. Even with the long field goal, I thought, Georgia cannot stop Baker Mayfield. This guy is impressive. And I think being down 17 points and winning that is going to give Georgia every bit as much confidence as Alabama is going to have. So this may be – I mean, we could be in for one of the best national championship games we've seen in my lifetime.
I am in agreement with you there, Michael. Michael, as always, thanks for being with us. If you're trying to reach Weber Mortgage, you want to get a brand-new mortgage, you want to do a refi, go to the GameDaySportsRadio.com website, follow the Weber Mortgage link, or Michael, give them the telephone number once more.
Absolutely. Just call us at 205-823-6701. Thanks, Boji. It's been a great season, and we've really enjoyed spending the time with y'all.
We appreciate you every week doing it, Michael. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, that's Michael Weber, president of Weber Mortgage. We'll be right back inside the numbers.
Picking college football winners every time isn't easy, but picking the right mortgage company is. Weber Mortgage has been helping people buy homes since 1999. Literally thousands of people are living in their dream homes with the help of Weber Mortgage. I'm Michael Weber, and using Weber Mortgage is a sure bet. If you're thinking about buying a home this year, call 205-823-6701 or visit us at webermortgage.com. That's 205-823-6701 for Weber Mortgage.
You're listening to Inside the Numbers with Bogey Wood. Catch a replay of this show at gamedaysportsradio.com. Hear interviews with coaches as well as current and former players, plus previews and breakdowns of this week's NFL and college football games. It's all at gamedaysportsradio.com. That's gamedaysportsradio.com.
Welcome back Inside the Numbers, joined again by Mike Bernard from OTM Sports. Mike, you heard Michael Weber and I talking about this great matchup that's going to happen Monday night over here in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Alabama and Georgia. So many storylines. I mean, you could just pick them all day long.
That's right, and you guys touched on a lot of them, but a couple that I don't think you touched on was, you know, the Ridley brothers are playing against each other. I don't know much about the kid from Georgia, but obviously Calvin Ridley is very good, and his brother's very good, and it's some of the storylines say that Calvin suggested his brother go to Georgia.
Yeah, you know, because listen, brothers want to play together and everything, but in the end, you're looking out for your brother's best interest, so to speak. And again, it's all about having a good fit. And if Calvin thought his brother would be a better fit at Georgia, obviously he wants him to go there and succeed. I think one of the interesting storylines in this game, and we touched on it last week, is that Jeremy Pruitt is going to sit there and he's going to try to beat Georgia as just as badly as he can. And Kevin Shore, the linebacker coach at Georgia, he's going to try to be beating Alabama just as badly as they can. But you know what? As soon as that final whistle blows, it doesn't matter if Alabama or Georgia win. Those two guys are going to go to work in Knoxville, Tennessee.
That's right, and that's a very interesting angle. Probably, I don't ever recall seeing any type of situation like that where the two teams play for a title and the two coaches go on to face another team. And, of course, this is an all-SEC matchup, so those two coaches are going to coach another SEC team.
Right. I tell you again, there's so many storylines. You could do a show just on the storylines. My one interesting stat that I look at this game, of course, you and I both are big on running the football and stopping the run, but I think you have to look at these two quarterbacks. Jalen Hurts, he's thrown for a little over 2,000 yards this year, 7 touchdowns and only 1 interception, yet has had critics all year long saying he's not doing enough. And then you have the freshman, Jake Fromm, over in Athens. He's thrown for 2,383 yards, 23 touchdowns, but he does have 5 interceptions. You know, again, everyone is looking at Fromm saying what a great year that he has had as a freshman, and he has, not taking anything away from him. But I think Jalen Hurts, I think he's underappreciated.
Yeah, after the regular season, I think he had 15 touchdowns and 1 interception, and all you hear from Alabama fans is how he can't throw it 15 yards down the field. And he's not asked to do that a lot. And, you know, look, I do think he's underappreciated. And I think he's one of the most poised athletes I've ever seen. When he does make a mistake, he doesn't hang his head. It's like it never even happened.
I totally agree with you there. There's not, you know, if you ask me to put together the greatest football team that we could this year with the guys that are currently playing, you know, I'm not saying that he would just be automatically my number one pick, but he's going to be in the conversation because the young man is a winner. When you look at these two teams and you look at the offenses and the defenses for that matter, they pretty much mirror each other. Alabama scoring 37 points a game, Georgia 36, the Tide only giving up 11 points a game, but Georgia holding it to under 2 touchdowns, only 13 points a game. I think when you look at these two teams, I mean, I look for, and again, I know we just talked about the quarterbacks, but man, I look for a great defensive battle here.
Right, and that's what Vegas expects as well. Alabama has been anywhere from 3 to 4.5 point favorite. This course, this game played in Atlanta. The total, very low, 44 in some casinos. So Vegas and the sharps out there think that this will be a low-scoring game. Now look, history of Alabama bowl games, 10-4, the over. So I know the Clemson game was a low-scoring game, But the other bowl games that Alabama plays in end up being high scoring. And remember, let's go back to 2012 SEC championship game. Those were some great defenses as well, and that was a real high scoring game.
It is, and I think the wild card game in all of this, or the wild card in all of this, is that the defensive staffs are very familiar with each other because they've basically all worked with each other at some point or another in the last 3 or 4 years. I think that the wild card in all this is the offensive coordinators. Brian Daboll in his first year at Alabama, and then Jim Chaney, he's just an old-timey football coach there at Georgia, and he has guided Jake Fromm and this Georgia offense to an outstanding season. Again, we know they ran into the buzzsaw down at Jordan-Hare against Auburn back late in the season, but listen, that was an anomaly. I think those 2 weeks when Auburn played Georgia and Alabama, they could have beaten anybody those days. So I don't put that off on Jim Chaney. I think, though, that these two offensive coordinators, I think they're going to be the wild card in this game.
Yeah, that could very well be the case. And another thing that I'm not hearing a lot about, but, Coach, I thought Anfernee Jennings, the linebacker for Alabama, played huge against Clemson, and he's out. So Alabama keeps getting dinged up and banged up at linebacker, and I think they really need him with that Georgia run game.
No doubt they need him, and Alabama has suffered linebacker injuries all year long, and even in the secondary, they've had some tweaks that they've had to play around. And, again, you want to be 100% when you go into a game like this, but after a long game with these two teams, they've played, Alabama's played 13 games, Georgia's played 14. Listen, you're going to be nicked up. You're not going to be 100% for this game. But, again, it just hurts when you have guys that are totally out and can't contribute at all.
Yeah, that's right. And especially when, like, a kid like Jennings that had such a huge game, and then now he's out for the biggest game of the season. And, of course, Georgia has players banged up, too. This time of the year, you're not going to be healthy. No team is. And one question I have, Coach, I've heard from guys at ticket brokers that have saying that Georgia's going to have like a maybe 65-35, maybe even 70-30 advantage. Have you heard anything on the crowd?
I have. The scuttlebutt around here in the Atlanta metro area is that Georgia fans are paying $3,000 and sometimes $4,000 for tickets and hospitality packages, because that's the only way that they can get a ticket. And we're not talking about being able to, you know, live in suites and stuff like that. We're talking about just club level seats. I mean, it's astronomical what tickets are going for over here. And the surprising thing to me is that these dog fans are so hungry to go to a national championship game. You know, they're remortgaging the house with Michael Weber and everything else, that they can get tickets to this game. It's crazy.
It is. And, you know, my friends in the ticket business, they told me years ago that the toughest ticket in college football history was the Auburn-Oregon championship game out in Phoenix, as far as, you know, price. And StubHub, and there was all that, you know, those issues where people refused to sell the tickets to them, and they had a big thing. And then 13, when Auburn played Florida State, that was a real high ticket price. But now this game has surpassed that. It's the cheapest tickets are like $2,000 on StubHub and some of the other sites. And that's just and look, I really think that if Georgia could get all the tickets, they would sell it out themselves.
Oh, no doubt about that. They would. All right, Mike, we got to wind down this edition of Inside the Numbers. But before you go, got to ask you now, who do you like, Alabama or Georgia?
I haven't decided yet, but for the show purposes, I'm going to go ahead and tell you I'm going to go against the grain and take Georgia.
I'm looking at it this way. I think Georgia can win the football game if they do one thing. If they can, and I told this, and you heard me tell it to Michael Weber, if Jake Fromm can stretch that Alabama secondary and make them respect a deep throw and make them pull one of those guys out of the box so they can't stack the box on the run, then I think that you're going to see Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, and DeAndre Swift be able to make some big plays in the running game for the Bulldogs. If that happens, I do think Georgia wins. However, I think if he can't stretch that Alabama secondary, I think that Alabama wins.
Yeah, Coach, and that's a tough question in this game. I'll take Georgia plus the points. I know that Saban's proteges do not do well against him, and that's an understatement, but I'm going to lean to Georgia plus the points in this one.
All right, let's just remember now, for every championship ring Nick Saban has, Kirby Smart has one too. They both have five. So somebody's going to get a sixth one on Monday night. Thank you for joining us on Inside the Numbers. We'll talk to you soon. This could take